The world crosses 3 million cases in the United States, fully a third of that with 1 million cases of COVID-19, aka the honey badger virus. Hello, everyone. Dr. Chris Martinson here with your daily SARS-CoV-2 update, April 28th, 2020, day 96. I'm calling this one immunocompromised. Now we're going to move on. I want to talk about the idea that this virus is really a tricky beast. And so this is a very rare thing. I'm not raising this to be alarmist and say, oh my God, you know, lots of things happen with children. But we're trying to paint a picture here, and we're getting clues about how this virus actually operates. And so one of the things I want to do is talk about some of these what seem to be relatively rare things, because I think it gives us good clues over what's actually happening. This just came out on the 27th, today being the 28th. Coronavirus-related inflammatory syndrome emerges among UK children. So we don't know what this is yet. It may not even be related to COVID, but it kind of looks like it probably is. Over the last 3 weeks, there has been an apparent rise in the number of children of all ages presenting with a multi-system inflammatory state requiring intensive care across London and also in other regions of the UK, reads a significant alert issued to general practitioners in North London by the UK's Clinical Commissioning Group, whatever that is. There is a growing concern that a COVID-19-related inflammatory syndrome is emerging in children in the UK, or that there may be another as yet unidentified infectious pathogen associated with these cases. That's the key here. Could be something else, but probably isn't, all things considered. All right. Those infected experience overlapping features of toxic syndrome and atypical Kawasaki disease, an illness that causes swelling and redness of the blood vessels, with blood parameters consistent with severe COVID-19 in children. So swelling and redness of the blood vessels. Again, rare cases. I think this is just a handful, or you know, maybe 100 or so. I couldn't get good statistics out of this, but it's happening and they're noticing this. But enough that it hit the radar screens here. Swelling and redness of the blood vessels. So this is a feature now that's really showing up, obviously, in the people who are really getting impacted with the ARDS. We see that microthrombi and even macrothrombi, the clots in the lungs, right? And as well, we're starting to see other clotting disorders. We talked about this in times past with the DIC and things like that. So I'll get to that in just a second. But at any rate, this is consistent with the idea that one of the things that COVID-19 is doing is creating clotting disorders and blood vessel disorders, which, again, you know, not entirely surprising that that would be the case, given where we see the ACE2 receptor distribution. All right, let me see here. I'm going to have to do this. Let me pull this off of here real quick, because I didn't mean to put that up there. All right. Remember, this was an article that came out almost 10 days ago now. I thought it was pretty good, but I just wanted to bring it back up again just because I'm trying to reinforce one point here. This one was, how does coronavirus kill? Clinicians trace a ferocious rampage through the body from brain to toes. And it's really speaking to how this disease rampages through the entire body. It's not hitting any one thing. It's not just hitting the lungs or anything like that, although that would be a bad spot that it does hit. As the number of confirmed cases of COVID-19 surges past 2.2 million globally and deaths surpass 150,000, oops, you can tell how old this is, 10 days old. Look how tame these numbers are. We're at 3 million and we're well over 200,000 now. Clinicians and pathologists are struggling to understand the damage wrought by the coronavirus as it tears through the body. They are realizing that although the lungs are ground zero, its reach can extend to many organs, including the heart, blood vessels, kidneys, gut, and brain. The disease can attack almost anything in the body with devastating consequences, says cardiologist Harlan Krumholtz of Yale University and Yale New Haven Hospital, who is leading multiple efforts to gather clinical data on COVID-19. Its ferocity is breathtaking and humbling. This really is a very humbling virus at this point in time. And I'm raising this now because of all the calls to open things up. I get it. Where the economy's approaching capital D depression time. People are really starting to lose hope. They're out of work. It's going to be very economically destructive. That is going to have serious impacts on people's health and well-being and all of that too. So we have to balance all of these things out. And so as we say, well, we're tired of this, let's open everything up, we have to remember that we're up against a very ferocious beast. It has not been tamed. It has not been domesticated. All right, continuing on with this, what follows is a snapshot. This is just one piece of this very long article. You should read it. It's fabulous. I just think it's a great thing to read through entirely. What follows is a snapshot of the fast-evolving understanding of how the virus attacks cells around the body, especially in the roughly 5% of patients who become critically ill. Despite the more than 1,000 papers now spilling into journals and onto preprint servers every week, a clear picture is elusive as the virus acts like no pathogen humanity has ever seen. I want to read that again. Acts like no pathogen humanity has ever seen. That's actually true at this point in time, as far as I can tell. This is a real beast of a virus. Without larger perspective-controlled studies that are only now being launched, scientists must pull information from small studies and case reports, often published at warp speed and not yet peer-reviewed. We need to keep a very open mind as this phenomenon goes forward, says Nancy Rao, a liver transplant physician who's been treating COVID-19 patients at Rush University Medical Center. We are still learning. So there's lots to learn, and we see that this thing is attacking all over the body. And of course, that's not surprising to us as we looked at the ACE2 tissue distribution, ACE2 being the receptor, one of the two receptors that we know that the honey badger virus attaches to and uses to gain entry into the cells in order to complete its so-called life cycle where it replicates inside the cell. So look at all the places we find lots and lots of ACE2. Intestine, yes, we know that this thing really attacks the gut. Kidney, yeah, all over the place in the kidney. Kidney disease, kidney damage. It's the second leading cause of death is kidney failure after the pulmonary effects. We know it can attack the stomach. Bile duct and liver, yep, we're seeing lots of damage in the bile duct and liver showing up in the clinical reports. Oral cavity, lung, of course, thyroid, esophagus, bladder, breast, uterus, prostate, and many other places, including especially the lining cells, the epithelial cells lining the blood vessels in there as well. So all over the place. All right, so I want to connect this now to some other data that we see coming out. And one of that pieces of data is this. This just came out today is April 28th, so it just came out today in Time magazine. From COVID toes to hives, these are the skin conditions dermatologists think could be signs of coronavirus. Again, kind of a rare thing. I presented, not totally rare, but it's enough that people are noticing it now. COVID toes, I presented those kind of gross pictures. They look like frostbite on people's toes, particularly young people, particularly children. So a pattern that's emerging here is that this is striking young and the children, very different from the aged. And that's what I'm drawing towards here is really a hypothesis about why that might be. Dermatologists around the world are gathering data on what may be largely overlooked symptoms of COVID-19, skin conditions ranging from rashes to pseudo-frostbite. Many viral illnesses, including chickenpox, measles, and mono, are accompanied by telltale skin rashes, often a result of the body's heightened and inflammatory response while fighting off infection. Though more research is needed, a growing number of case reports and preliminary studies suggest SARS-CoV-2 also can affect the skin. In late March, an Italian physician submitted a letter to the editor of the Journal of the European Academy of Dermatology and Venereology, describing skin conditions that are affected about 20% of 88 COVID-19 patients analyzed in Lombardy. Most of them developed a red rash on their torsos, while a few suffered hives or blisters resembling chickenpox. Then in early April, a dermatology organization representing more than 400 French dermatologists issued a statement noting that among probable COVID-19 patients, they had seen skin symptoms, including hives, red rashes, and frostbite-like lesions on the extremities. We presented that back at the time when we first read that French study. All right. In the U.S., the pseudo-frostbite condition described by the French dermatologists has been nicknamed COVID toes. More than 100 cases of the condition, so not that many, characterized by purple, bruise-like bumps and swelling have been recorded in a COVID-19 symptom registry kept by the American Academy of Dermatology. Dr. Alisa Femia, director of inpatient dermatology and a specialist in autoimmune connective tissue disease, says she's seen all of the above conditions among suspected or confirmed COVID-19 patients in New York City and finds the range of possible symptoms remarkable. For a virus to do all of these things that it's doing within the first 5 months of existing in humans is pretty striking to me, she says. And I would agree with that. So this humility, this idea that we're still learning about this particular virus and it's ultra complicated and complex how it affects human condition is really something that I think we have to maintain an open mind about as we think about opening everything back up again. All right. We're also seeing lots more from April 27th, this article, Why is COVID-19 Causing Strokes in Young and Middle-Aged People? We're seeing more and more of this as well. This article writes, we are also learning about the devastating effects of this virus as it attacks other organs, including the kidney, heart, and brain. However, the virus's ultimate target that may inflict the most damage via either a direct effect of the virus, hypoxia, low oxygen, secondary inflammation, or disseminated intravascular coagulation, DIC, are blood vessels leading to formation of blood clots or excessive bleeding, in some cases a consequence of the consumption of clotting factors. So, so much clotting has happened elsewhere in the body that you run out of clotting factors. Basically, you become a hemophiliac, in essence, and so you can get excess bleeding somewhere else in your body because you ran out of clotting factors. But the virus does not seem to be attacking just any size blood vessel in young adults, but larger blood vessels that feed important parts of the brain that are critical to movement, thinking, and breathing. These include large blood vessels such as the middle cerebral artery or anterior cerebral artery that supply large and critical areas of the brain. When blockages in larger blood vessels, known as large vessel occlusions or LVOs, as they are referred to, develop, the effects can be permanent or life-changing if not diagnosed and treated immediately. So this would be something to watch out for, particularly in the middle-aged or the young, is any of those signs of stroke, right? Which is facial drooping. Can you lift both arms? You know, do you have any loss of sense out in the extremities? And remember, time is what matters. If you think you have a stroke, you got to get to the hospital really quick because we've got some great therapies that can treat strokes, but you got to know that they, again, time matters. just like in hydroxychloroquine treatment, time might be a factor there too. All right. We talked about this DIC and that it's a strong predictor of fatal outcome. So here's some ways that a score that people can get, which rests on four separate inputs, the platelet count, the D-dimer levels, the fibrinogen levels, and prothrombin time prolongation. And if you get a score of over 5, then this was very much associated with a bad outcome for people. 71% of non-survivors had a score of over 5 compared to only 0.6% of survivors. So very strongly correlated with that. So what's the story that's emerging here? Well, we are seeing a lot of clotting, vascular, and hematologic sort of impacts, as well as some of the other direct organ impacts that in the lungs and liver and heart and things like that. So the clue trail, multiple organs being attacked. We know that this virus can attach strongly to both the ACE2 receptor and the CD147 receptor. I'm going to just show you what that means again. We know that it affects the old far more than the young, and it causes widespread damage, but in some, but not all, or even most, right? So very, very interesting clue trail. So it speaks to the idea that there's an age factor. I'm going to guess that there's some sort of micronutrient factor in here as well. I can't wait to see all the blood data sort of get sifted through by a big AI program, and obviously probably a genetic factor as well. So lots of factors to unravel, but here's an idea. Let's talk about immunity. When we talk about your immune system response, there are two ways that your body can respond. One is called the humoral response here. And so what happens is you get exposed to some sort of a foreign invader. It's a foreign protein. It's a virus, maybe. It's a bacteria. Your body, this is the host in this case, it looks like a mouse, detects this foreign invader. And one path it can go down, the humoral response, these B cells get activated, right? They see this, get presented with this antigen. There's a cascade pathway. These plasma cells then are recruited and they start producing tons of these antibodies, these little Y-shaped things here. And these then attach to very strongly and surround and bind to this antigen and thereby neutralize it. So if this was a virus particle and it was surrounded with these antibodies would then be attached to the exact same spots on that virus that it would need to dock on your receptors and get into your cells inside your body. So it thereby neutralizes that virus. And these would be called neutralizing antibodies if that happened. But there's another response as well, can go down this path called the cellular response. This involves these T cells, right? And the T cells actually belong to a couple of broad classes. You got your T helper cells and you got your cytotoxic cells. And these more directly come down and will actually kill an infected cell directly. So this is part of the cytokine storm that we talked about in the lungs when we saw those pathology reports in there. We saw tons and tons of these cellular response immune cells packed into the lungs of those poor people who were unable to breathe. So that's kind of interesting that you have these two responses. And what's interesting is that it may well be that old versus young, the young may well have a more aggressive cellular response and the old may have a more tuned and a more overly aggressive humoral response to this particular virus. Just an idea, just putting it out there, but it may start to account for some of the differences we're seeing between the old and the young. As well, if we look down into this cellular response here, I want you to just notice that this foreign body can come in. A macrophage, which we saw a lot of these in the first autopsy reports, these macrophages come in. Macrophage, big eater. So the macrophage comes in, it eats these foreign bodies, and then is a big part of either going down this pathway or this pathway. So why the macrophages? Why is this important? Well, because I just want to remind you of something we talked about before. This SARS-CoV-2 is a real beast because not only is it coming in the ACE2 receptor, but it can come in this second receptor, the CD147 receptor. And we talked about this April 14th, I believe, maybe 13th. I can't remember. It's back there a little bit. So it does invade host cells via this 147 to spike protein binding. This was the research that showed it going into in cells in culture, but showed it going into normal ACE2 bearing cells, the same as SARS. But SARS can't get into these MT2 cells here, which are an immune cell, a T helper cell line that they grow in the lab. And we see it here in a different line, also a T helper cell line. So SARS-CoV-2 does get into the T helper cells, which would be these things here. So it's coming in and messing up this cellular response as well as maybe doing something over here on the other side. All right. So since we know it's getting to this 147 cell, which we find the T helper cells, where else do you find that? Well, you kind of find this as well. It's on red blood cells. So that's where the cell is. I'm not sure if this is getting into the red blood cells. That would be a weird system. I don't understand what would happen if it did, because the red blood cells don't have the machinery a virus needs to replicate. So not unclear what that means, but it's just interesting to note that as well. CD147 is on macrophages and monocytes. And so it has a big role to play there as well. So there's a possibility here that, you know, lots of research to figure this out. But, you know, one of the things we've got to be open to is this idea that there's a very, very complicated and complex thing that COVID-19 is doing when it comes in and it's mucking up things all down these pathways through here. So that could begin to explain some of the differential responses we're seeing. Old to young, some people, not other people. You know, it's going to be something that really needs to be uncovered. So I really like this. Came out a while ago in New York Times. Charlie Worsell did a good job. He answered this question, you know, when will life be normal again? And the answer is, well, we just don't know. Because what don't we know? Well, look what we don't know. We don't know how many people even have been infected with COVID-19. We don't even know the full range of symptoms yet. We're finding those out all the time. I presented some of those today with the dermatology. We don't always know why some infections develop into severe disease. I'm showing the complexity of that with some of the CD147 cellular humoral response data there. We don't know the full range of risk factors. We don't know how exactly deadly the disease is. We don't even know basic things like how many virus particles does it even take to launch an infection? Well, how far does the virus travel in outdoor spaces or indoor settings? We're learning about that all the time, right? You know, have these airborne movements affected the course of the pandemic? Don't know. He continues on. We don't know what percentage of adults are asymptomatic or what percentage of children are asymptomatic. We don't know for certain if it's going to subside as we get into the warmer months of spring and summer. We don't know the strength and duration of immunity, right? This is really important. Though people who recover from COVID-19 likely have some degree of immunity for some period of time, we don't know. We don't know. Are people going to be immune for 6 months, 3 months, the rest of their lives? You know, you get a measles vaccination as a child, you're pretty much good to go the rest of your life, right? So that's a very long-lasting humoral immune response. But if young people are fighting this off on a cellular response, if they're fighting it off down this pathway right here, well, then this isn't typically a long-lasting pathway because it just doesn't work out that way. So we don't know. And we don't know why some who've been diagnosed as fully recovered from the virus are testing positive time after time after leaving quarantine. We don't know why some recovered patients have low levels of antibodies, but maybe it's because they didn't go down this pathway. They went down this pathway, right? Always a possibility. We don't know what the long-term health effects of severe COVID-19 infection are, and we don't even know what the mild, what's going to be from the mild consequence either. We don't know the consequence to the lungs of those who do survive intensive care, although we presented evidence earlier from the doctor in Germany with the dive team that it looks bad on film, so it looks pretty permanent. Might not be. We don't know yet. We don't know if any treatments are truly effective. We don't know if or when researchers are going to develop a successful vaccine. We don't know how many vaccines can be deployed and administered in the first months after a vaccine becomes available. We don't know how a vaccine is going to be administered and who's going to get it first. If you saw the movie Contagion, Netflix series Contagion, that was exactly one of the big things they had to work through there. We don't know if a vaccine is going to be free or costly. We don't know if a vaccine will be needed to be updated every year. Is this thing going to mutate? We don't know how, when we do open things up again, how we're going to do it. And we don't know if people will be afraid to gather in crowds. Some will. Enough will. That is going to change how life feels, looks and feels for everybody. So remember, yeah, we definitely are doing a good job, I think, of slowing the pandemic down. We kept the hospitals working. Now, how do we not, you know, do more damage by having the economy go into a complete shutdown? Really disturbing data right now coming out from the food chain. And I see lots of supply chains breaking down, but the food supply chain obviously breaking down. You've probably seen it. Tyson taking out a big full-page ad in the Washington Post warning about a breakdown in the protein supply chain, in their case for chicken and pork and stuff like that. Smithfield shutting down the pork factories. Farmers plowing fields under hundreds of thousands of gallons of milk dumped on the ground because the supply chain broke down to carry that milk through its normal commercial routes into a commercial settings. So we're at the same time, we have record demand on food banks. We're also seeing a record amount of food being absolutely destroyed. And that's just a colossal failure to manage this part in here. So we don't have leaders right now, because if we had leaders, they would have said, you know, $10 billion to the banks to administer a few loans. Maybe not. How about half that, banks? You get $5 billion. $5 billion goes into figuring out how to get food out of fields where it's rotting and being dumped down drains if it's milk. And we get that into the hands of food banks and people who really need it. That would have been leadership. But of course, we have managers and we got crappy managers. Why? Well, the proof is in the pudding. If you see fields getting plowed under and milk being dumped down drains, it means you got bad managers. And end of story. Full stop. So plant a garden, because you just really I'll just keep saying it. There's some very good reasons to plant a garden. Vitamin D from working out in the sun, healthier food, but I think it's also going to be an important source of fresh vegetables for you as you move forward into this year. Conclusions for today, excess deaths. I think these are probably the best way we're going to have to track COVID-19's rampage at this point. Everything else is just is too difficult how things get classified, but this is a pretty good macro statistic to sort of tell us where we are. And by the way, that macro statistic alone tells us this ain't the flu. And anybody who's out there with bad math trying to compare this to flu needs to be able to explain away those excess death charts that we showed before. And this virus, really humbling and surprising, and is probably best if we think that it's still got a few tricks to play on us yet. We don't know what's going to happen when people are exposed to it a second time in a year, and we hope they don't have the antibody-dependent enhancement, the ADE pathway, because that would be a very bad thing if that was one of the tricks that remains up the sleeve of this particular virus. Cellular versus humoral immune response. This may explain a difference between young and old. Much work to be done to understand this, but I just wanted you to understand that there are two big pathways in your body for immune responses. And antibodies are one, but there is the cellular response as well. And it might be that if one path dominates over another, that could explain the grossly huge, enormous, big differences we see young and old, and person A to person B. But we simply don't know. We simply don't know a lot of things. And we're going to have to learn to live with new risks. That's just part of this. And along with that, a new appreciation for life and for loved ones. I just did a podcast today with Sergey Young. Sergey works with Peter Diamandis and other people on life extension and enhancement. Very optimistic people. They're really big believers in technology. But it was a fascinating interview, and look for that when it comes out, because Sergey had a really refreshing set of point of views, and one of them was around this principle right here, which was he had some takeaways from COVID-19, and one of them was that it's actually bringing a new appreciation for what's really important in life, and I think it's doing that. And so, yes, we're going to have to learn to live with new risks, but we also get some new appreciations to go along with that. So with that, that's all I've got today. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back again soon. And I'm going to be focusing more and more on the economy and in particular, the really unfair things that are being done now, at least in the United States, but also in Europe. The way the central banks are operating, it seems to be of, by, and for the mega wealthy and well-connected. And I think that's a very poor policy for a variety of reasons. But we'll get into that over the next few days. All right. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Hi, folks. Adam Taggart, co-founder of Peak Prosperity, here with good news. In his daily videos, Chris often refers to the book that he and I wrote, Prosper: How to Prepare for the Future and Create a World Worth Inheriting. It presents a practical model for living with greater resilience, and those who read it and followed its advice were much better prepared for the coronavirus outbreak than the average household. Given its heightened relevance to the turbulent times we now find ourselves in, Chris and I want everyone to benefit from this book's formula for better, more secure living. So we're giving the book to you for free. To get your copy, simply visit peakprosperity.com/freebook. We think you'll find this an extremely valuable and inspiring resource for the current COVID-19 outbreak and for being well-positioned for any kind of crisis that comes our way in the future. Thanks for listening and happy reading.
Yeah, I really don't understand why everybody isn't following the same rules right now. They're very clear, so let's take a minute and let's go over them again. First, you must not leave the house for any reason, unless of course you have a reason, and then you may leave the house. All stores are closed except those that are open. And all stores must close unless, of course, they need to stay open. This virus is deadly, but don't be afraid of it. It can only kill people who are vulnerable and also those who are not vulnerable. We should stay locked down until the virus stops infecting people. And it will only stop infecting people if enough of us get infected that we build immunity. So it is very important that we get infected and also do not get infected. You should not go to the doctor's office or the hospital unless you have to go there. Unless, of course, you are too sick to go there. This virus has no effect on children except for those children in which it affects. The virus remains active on different surfaces for 2 hours or 4 hours or 6 hours, but in most cases it's days and not hours, and it needs a damp environment or a cold environment that is warm and dry in the air. unless the air is plastic. Schools are closed, so you need to homeschool your children unless you can send them to school because you are not home. If you are at home, you can school your children using various portals and online classrooms unless you have poor internet, more than one child, only one computer, or you are working from home. Baking cakes can be considered math, science, or art. If you are home educating, you can include household chores within their education curriculum. And if you are home educating, you may start drinking at approximately 10 a.m. every day. If you are not home educating children, you may also start drinking at approximately 10 a.m. Masks are useless at protecting you against the virus, but you still need to wear one because it can save lives. And in some cases, it may even be mandatory, but also maybe not. You must not go to work, but you can get another job, at which point you may go to work. Stay home. I don't know how many more celebrities we need to have tell you how important it is to go outside and take care of your mental health. There is no shortage of groceries in the supermarket. There are simply many things missing. You don't need to go buy a bunch of toilet paper, but you should buy some in case you need it. If you are sick, you may go out once you are better, but those in your household, they cannot go out once you are better unless, of course, they need to go out. Animals are not affected by the virus, except for that cat that tested positive in Belgium in February, plus a couple tigers. The number of corona-related deaths will be announced daily, but we don't know how many people are infected because we were only testing those who are almost dead to determine if that's what they will die of. The people who die of corona who are not counted won't or will be counted, but maybe not. To help protect yourself during these times, you should be eating well and exercising, but exercising only eating what you have at home to avoid going to the stores unless you need toilet paper or a fence panel. It's important to get fresh air, but don't go to parks, but do go walk in other places. Just don't sit down unless you are old or pregnant. But if you do sit down, don't sit for too long. Unless you are old and you are pregnant, in which case you need to sit down. But if you do sit down, don't eat unless you've had a long walk, which you are allowed to do if you are old or pregnant, except for times in which you aren't. Don't visit old people, but you have a moral obligation to take care of old people and bring them food and medicine. And finally, no businesses will go down due to coronavirus except those businesses that go down due to COVID-19. I hope this cleared up any questions about what we should and should not be doing during this time. Please educate your friends and family with this information so we can remove any and all confusion surrounding this time. Thank you.